Live from Burbank, California, home of obscene oil profits, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's light, sweet, and crude, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, you lurking conservatives, which is all any conservative can do at this point in time. Lurk around, sulk around, try to pretend like they still got game, but there's no game anymore. Wow. Jim, I don't know at what age one has to be to learn how to talk about health problems during a meal. When does one learn how to do that? Because apparently it is going to be what the future holds.
What, you were doing that today?
I didn't do it. I had lunch with an old buddy of mine, a fellow that I wrote with, did a pilot with this guy, a little older than me, good guy, great to see him, haven't seen him in a couple of years. Since I last seen him, had a little bit of the prostate cancer, and that came up at lunch. What have you been doing? I've been doing the prostate cancer thing, and he had some of his prostate removed, and then I had to hear about it, and I'm holding a crab roll. All right, I'm holding some sushi going, got a little spicy tuna roll, and he said they had to go in twice. Now, I don't know at what point one crosses that line where one learns that this is basically what you talk about after a certain point, but I'll tell you, I, thank God, not having had any health problems yet, I am completely paralyzed with fear about hearing about them. I'm glad the guy's okay, but I get a certain queasiness when organs and things being removed and malignancies and possible mortality comes up over food. I'll tell you, I get a little queasy if I just hear about faltering organs, even if I'm not eating. But I think it's my own fear that that's coming from. What is your experience with that, Jim?
What, faltering organs?
Yeah, faltering organs. Yeah, I mean, even in a comedic way, if you've been having some faltering organ problems.
My organ's fine. My organ, the only organ I have that's faltered is my pancreas.
Are you serious?
In 1970.
Now let's try and identify the feeling that I just got right there. Because literally, you said you had a pancreatic problem, your pancreas faltered, and I literally had this feeling of like, it's a feeling of sadness, terror, and a little bit
of... It's not going to happen to you. It was juvenile diabetes. It won't happen to you. You'll get the adult onset.
So I'm out of the woods? You mean I can get... See, now this is it. This is my own fear of mortality.
The adult onset is brought on usually by horrible eating habits and all kinds of...
What do I
got
to eat to get that?
Did
I just say that like it was something I wanted to win?
No, you know what you...
What
know
do
what
I
got
to eat to get this diabetes you're talking about?
A lot of sugar and a lot of high-fat stuff and you know, white bread and...
Lately, I've been bad, but I don't know if I'm... I have some diabetes in my family. See, now this is exactly why I can't talk about it. Do you see what's happening now? Do you see where this conversation...
You're not going to get it because you ate better than most people do.
I do, but I mean, this is why I'm saying I get a nauseousness, I get a fear, and that pit of existential panic opens up inside of me, and it goes from you saying I had juvenile diabetes to eventually in my head, within two or three turns of the screw, going, I'm going to die. I'm going to die of this thing.
No, the worst thing about juvenile diabetes is just not having, you know, the money to take care of yourself.
Oh, I'm going to die.
All right, you're not going to die. You're going to be killed. You're not going to die.
What do you mean by that?
I have special...
Oh, you give me the willies.
I know what's going to happen in the future.
Let's tell people what's on the show tonight. We got a great show. We got from the Fire Sign Theater. We got Philip Proctor joining us, the master of the Moog. This is a weird guest. I don't know if he's a weird guy, and I don't know where he came from, but the guy who books our show, Slick Charlie Amter.
He's a weird guy.
He's a weird guy. Not Charlie, but this cat.
Oh, yeah, I know.
This guy, Gershon Kingsley, they re-released his CD, The Moog is God, I think is what it's called, if I'm not mistaken. I got it in my bag. You can go to the link on the website. This guy is the guy that did Popcorn. We talked about that yesterday. Beep, 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 beep. You know that one?
Yeah.
But he also did this double CD where he literally does a Shabbat service for Temple. It's got all... I can't tell if this music is genius or completely cheesy, but it's very interesting. And there's a certain resurgence with this guy, Gershon Kingsley, in the electronic music world. He's going to be with us. Shyla Duan, who we've had on the show before, the New York Times journalist who's been on the beat of the Gulf States post-Katrina, had some news break today. Not break, but I mean, I want to stay up to speed with what's going on in the Katrina response, because I don't want that to get lost. Everything seems to get lost. Once news goes by the wayside, people just, they forget about it, and there's some bad stuff going on, and I just want to stay on top of that, if that's okay. Right now, a lot has happened in the world today, obviously, and we here at the Mark Maron Show don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here's today's Mark Maron Show short order news. After conducting an inquiry, a Senate panel is recommending that the government abolish FEMA. In response, FEMA said, oh, wait a minute, that's an error. They haven't responded. The Senate has voted to divert some of the money President Bush requested for the Iraq War to increase security on the nation's borders and give the Coast Guard new boats and helicopters. The Senate said they needed to strengthen the borders and Coast Guard for fears of Americans wanting to get the hell out while Bush is still in office. Yeah, that's it. A Ku Klux Klan group plans to hold a rally June 10th on the grounds of the Antietam, of course, National Battlefield.
Antietam, yeah, it's a very important battle.
Hey, you don't got to tell me, I'm a history buff.
I know you are.
Yeah. The Antietam National Battlefield cited the bloodiest one-day clash of the Civil War. While no longer the political force they once were in the South, the Klan still holds the record for organizing America's least popular parades. And that's the short order news. I did one of those things you like.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I was doing in that particular pause?
You were stewing?
I was stewing. Do you know what I was stewing about?
Antietam.
Exactly. What kind of idiot doesn't know that word? It's a peculiar spelling, though.
Well,
am I wrong?
You hear it a lot, but you don't. It's hard to know that when you see it spelled.
I'd like to be noted right now as a credit to my ability, to my humility, and my sense of my ability to be humble, is that this is a tape show. And if I were a prima donna narcissistic douchebag, I could have said, hey, Bill, we're going back. I'm not going to put this out there with me saying Antietam, like Anti-M. We're going to go back so I can say it right, so I can look smart to the people that are listening, because I'm no dummy, and people think I'm smart. But I didn't do that, Jim.
Yeah,
you know why?
Because, you know, we can't spend that much time in the studio, right?
No, because I'm going to die.
You're not going to die. Someone's going to get you.
Oh, that's horrible that you said that.
I see dead jokes.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I had another co-host at another time that pulled a similar prank on me in order to teach me a lesson, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Somebody tried to kill you?
No, but I was told that I was going to be killed.
I was told I was going to be killed, too, by Monty Hoffman.
Now we're dropping esoteric names. Now you're throwing names around that people don't understand. Explain who Monty Hoffman is.
He was a big comic, big guy from New York who used to hang out at the Holy City Zoo in San Francisco, and he was a funny guy and not funny guy, but he was very, very...
You're being awfully generous to Monty Hoffman. Monty Hoffman is a frightening, crazy man who did comedy.
Okay, you're right, but I didn't want to say that.
And he was an okay comic, but he's one of those guys, when you see him, you go, wow, you're not in jail and you're still alive. That's great.
And he had, at that time, he had a posse, what he called a posse. He had two bodyguards and watching him go around from place to place, buy coke or do coke.
Okay, yeah,
at one point...
So it wasn't his fault that he was a weird guy.
No.
It was the cocaine's fault.
He threatened my life.
And his hands and the spoon that went up. Well, go ahead. He threatened your life?
Well, you know, Barry and I were on stage, and he walked in and out of the club, and we made fun of him, because that's what you do when you're on stage. And then, you know, he just he picked me up by my lapels.
He freaked out. Let me tell you a little story about a young Mark Maron, a young chubby Mark Maron before braces.
You were chubby when you were young?
Back off!
You could get...
Just back off!
Juvenile... diabetes.
Why do we got... Man. I'm not chubby now, and the braces are off, and they didn't work. But let's not rub it in. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Here's the kind of guy I was. Some guy... You know what? This is a weird story, because it's not
this
even
really... This portion of the Mark Maron Show was brought to you by...
Where'd that come from? Boy, that... that almost screwed up everything.
See, we're not going to even go back and redo that, are we?
You know what we're doing right now?
What's that?
We're unintentionally paying homage to the Firesign Theater. Is what we're doing. What we've been doing right here is much like one of their bits, only much shorter.
And, Phil, and unfunny.
Phil Proctor has just entered the building, and I see him there in the booth. We're going to be talking to him in a little while. Let's talk to Shyla Dewan from the New York Times in just a second and get a little serious for a minute and see what's going on with the evacuees from Katrina who are trying to be FEMA, and I believe perhaps the state of Texas is trying to push them out of their temporary housing. We'll find out what's going on with that in a minute. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show.
And now he's one of the big three, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
I'd like to think of myself as one of the big three, whatever that means. I know what it means.
Yeah.
Now I'm worried that Monty Hoffman's going to come kick my ass.
No, like I don't think he can.
All right. Have you seen him with his... I don't want to make fun of the guy.
I think he has adult onset.
I don't want to make fun of the guy. He's not... He's it's. Let's leave him alone. I just read that they're thinking about ditching FEMA altogether to create another agency, the National Preparedness and Response Authority, create more bureaucracy, whereas what they should do is just make it a cabinet post again and let it operate efficiently,
yeah.
Give the cabinet director direct line to the president like it used to be when it worked properly for the most part. But there's a bigger story coming out that relates to FEMA that I'd like to talk about with our guest. New York Times reporter Shyla Dewan has been on the Gulf region beat since Katrina. She had a piece in the New York Times today about what's going on with the evacuees in Houston, and we're going to talk to her about it now. Thanks for joining us, Shyla Dewan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Since I've been down to New Orleans, I've sort of got this born-again kind of effort to keep people informed about what's going on down there. I don't want this information to get lost.
They say you have to see it.
I think that's got to be true because it certainly blew my mind enough to make sure that you're a regular guest on my show.
Excellent.
Okay, so why don't you tell us the horrible news about what is happening to these poor people that were evacuated from New Orleans and surrounding areas to Houston?
Well, it's not even just Houston. They're doing this across the country. They gave these vouchers out to about 60,000 families who were fleeing the hurricane, swimming through alligator-infested waters, getting rescued from their rooftops, bouncing around from place to place, and finally, when they got somewhere, they were given a voucher for 12 months of housing.
A year.
A year.
Mm-hmm.
Housing and utilities.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those were given out in Houston because Houston was very efficient about the way they implemented their program.
Mm-hmm.
But FEMA was hand-in-hand with these local governments and negotiating all the details with them the whole time. And now FEMA has decided that about a third of these families, and these are families, not people, because it's even more people, 55,000 families, and, you know, that equals 150,000 people or whatever.
Wow.
A third of them are not eligible for these vouchers, and they're going to have to start paying their own rent or leave.
So this
again,
is,
move again.
This is unbelievable. So this we're talking now, it's about 8 months after Katrina. These people have been in these temporary situations for 7 or 8 months, right?
Well, actually, a lot of them less than that, because some of them bounced around for 2 or 3 months. So some of them only got into place in November or December, and they were expecting, you know, a little bit of calm stability until the holidays next year.
Well, how the hell is FEMA justifying this, and where is this? Why is this happening? I guess is my question.
I think if you ask the Houston officials who have been the most intensely involved, they will tell you that this is coming from FEMA's legal department, which is kind of a
disaster area.
Well, it's say it's heavy on paper and they're not on the ground, but. You know, FEMA has all kinds of reasons why they're doing this. And the biggest distinction that they make is that these programs were all put in place under the emergency housing regulations. Emergency housing is available to anyone, almost anyone, from a disaster region. All you have to do is say, I live in New Orleans, and here you go, here's some housing.
Right.
But FEMA says, even though there's no legal limit to how long you can give someone emergency housing, FEMA says, you know, they were never intending to give anyone emergency housing for this long.
But what are they, first of all, I guess, one, what are they expecting these people to do? And two, is this about money? I mean, how the hell can FEMA
given their reputation and how people see them now, do this?
Well, they're not guided by a moral compass necessarily. They're guided by a general counsel for FEMA writing a decision that says, you know, guys, I don't think we can do emergency housing for this long. You need to go in and transfer all these people. This is a huge, huge program. Transfer every single one of them to a different program, which has stricter eligibility requirements. So those, the rest of those people either supposedly, according to FEMA, have insurance or didn't show up for their inspection or didn't fill out their paperwork right or, you know, I mean, there's countless...
Right. How are they notifying the people? What are they telling them the reasons are?
In some cases, people are getting a letter saying, you are not eligible for further assistance. We told you why earlier.
And they don't know why.
They don't know why.
Okay, so
I talked to one woman who got two letters. They were both dated the same day. One said, you are eligible. The other one said, you are ineligible.
So there's chaos, there's confusion, there's bureaucratic problems, and now these people are going to be out on the street probably with no... Is there any indication to you, Shiloh Dewan, that that there's a faction within the Texas state government that wants these people out of the state?
No. That Houston has been battling FEMA every step of the way to keep these people in there and keep this program in place.
Well,
they think that it's just a matter of compassion.
And what about, is there any solution to this?
Well, to me, the simplest solution would be just leave the program in place. It's one of the programs that FEMA has managed to do that is working and that is housing tens of thousands of families. And it's costing money to change the administration of it. Even if you're, you know, going to get rid of a third of the people, it's still costing a lot of money to re-sign leases and do this enormous administrative task of switching it over. It just seems like, in the long run, it would save everyone a lot of time and effort.
Is there any indication that we should look out for them maybe subcontracting out to a company that's going to take up the lead in taking care of these people?
Oh, they already did that. That's what they're doing.
Right.
They're transferring it from the local governments to corporate lodging consultant.
And that's what the Republicans want in the long run, is to gut FEMA and make it completely privatized, I assume. Not your job to tell me. But so who do you think is going to win who do you think is going to win the mayoral race in New Orleans?
That's a tough call. It really is. There's all kinds of theories about, you know, whether the vote's going to go by race or... You know,
all right. We'll check back with you. We got to wrap up.
Cool.
Shiloh Dewan, thank you for joining me.
Thanks.
Okay. Take care. We'll be back in a little while with Phil Proctor and more.
He lives in a plastic bubble. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim.
Man.
Hey, man.
All right.
Let's do our impression of some vintage Fire Sign Theater fan. No, man, look. Check it out. It's Lennon and Marx on the cover, man. It's Lennon and Marx. Not, you know what I mean? Like,
are you mimicking my parents?
Wow. Touchy.
What?
I think that Phil Proctor and company might have invented Cheech and Chong. Is that possible, that they invented him? I think Phil's out there going, yep, that's right. They all took it from us, the little bastards. If it weren't for us, none of them would have any funny. It wouldn't be worth anything. We're going to have Phil Proctor here in just a second. We're going to have Gershon Kingsley. Go do your homework on that guy. Man, that music, Jim. Maybe we should talk about let me talk about some serious stuff. All right, and let me get your opinion on some of this stuff.
The Percolator song. Is that the popcorn song or the Percolator song?
It's the same one. It was used a million different ways. I think the guy made his fortune on that song being used a million different ways. I think it was used on a ringtone recently. It was used on the Percolator commercials. He used to write several different commercials. He directed Broadway shows. The guy was a piano player for Bugsy Siegel in the original Flamingo Hotel. The dude was a organist at a Beverly Hills synagogue. This guy has had a life. He left Germany fleeing Nazis when he was a kid and went to Palestine. That was Israel before it was Israel, and worked on a kibbutz. All right, this guy's had a life. I feel on some level to be honored just to be a stop on that particular trajectory, my friend.
You feel unworthy?
Not at all. I mean, you got to listen to the music. I mean, let's not go crazy. I mean, it's very interesting. It's inspired. Literally, these are 15, you know, like 5 or 6 minute Moog instrumental cuts. There's a 5-part series, I think, called The History of the Jews that's instrumental Moog music. See, I could see that on a Firesign Theater record, but I could not. I couldn't. See, do you know that the Firesign Theater has 90 records out?
I believe it, yeah.
How many records do you have out, Phil? Well, I guess I should interview when you're in the room. How would that be? Yeah, why don't we wait on that? Okay. Sorry, man. I have an audience out there, and I'm busting on him, and he can't even defend himself. I saw his play. It's a very good play. Window of Opportunity.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should...
You get out.
I barely do. I try to get out. I haven't been going to the gym lately, and I don't want to get into that sad story, but here we go. Karl Rove went into the testify between before Patrick Fitzgerald's grand jury yesterday. He was in there for 4 hours. It's his fifth time in. His attorney swears that he's just volunteering. He's helping out. He's doing what he has to do. This guy is in trouble. I can't wait till the axe comes down. I cannot wait. I listened to Paul Begala today on old Ed Schultz's show. He thinks he's in trouble. This guy can say whatever the hell he wants, but if he gets an indictment, this would just put the cherry on the sundae of GOP corruption. It would be very exciting. And in a similar note, the judge in the Libby case, this guy Walton, says that, you know, Libby, F Scooter, E Scooter, I Scooter, Libby, who was Cheney's chief of staff, said the judge in that case said he's not going to drop the charges for some ridiculous reason that Libby's lawyers were asking him to drop it for, saying that that Fitzgerald had too much power, that he had more power than the attorney general. And the judge in the case said, go screw yourself. We're going through with this. You know, we can decide whether or not the power given to Patrick Fitzgerald is good or too much or too little. But that's got nothing to do with the indictment that sticks. So if Libby and Rove get indicted, how thrilling would that be? What's next? There's only one thing to do next.
A lot of pardons.
Yeah. Not if we can impeach him before. You see, that's the plan, Jim. Here's what we're going to do, all right? Just between you and me, we're going to take back the House of Representatives. We're going to make that Democratic again, okay? Okay, just hear me out. This is before we do your plan, which is scrap the entire American government and start from scratch with people who care. That's something that's not going to happen in 2006. I think it's a noble idea. It's a progressive idea. But come on, get real, sucker. All right, so listen. We get the Democrats into the House, maybe take the Senate back, I think, with a little bit of momentum, and then we start impeachment proceedings in earnest. And then Ralph Nader can come in and save the day. Look, maybe is there any way Ralph Nader will be around in what year? What are we looking at?
2008, what is that?
Really, you think? Go ahead, say your piece.
I think
say
it will.
Go ahead.
My piece is, you know, it's like the last days of Rome. It's over. Republic's gone.
And you know what happened in the last days
of
Rome?
It's up to us just to gather all the money we possibly can and go off to Amsterdam.
Let me ask you a question. In the last days of Rome, you think there were people standing around going, hey, we shouldn't be eating the pigs?
Yeah, there were.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Epicureans.
How many people?
Epicurus.
Do you think there were people standing around going, dude, it's going to end anyways. Let's just have a good time.
People who wanted the Republic back.
Yeah.
You know, but they were wiped out soon.
And being that I'm a history buff, but I have this problem because of aspartame intake. I have no recollection of what happened.
That.
Yeah, after Rome fell, who took over? Was there a theocracy?
Who took over?
Yeah.
Well, it fell because it gradually turned into a Christian, country.
Yeah, you don't got to tell me. I read that book.
And
I just have this memory problem because of the.
Then it just split in half, and the barbarians came in.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was a different kind of party. You really had to be on the right side of that.
The Germans. The Germans and the English came.
Okay. I do know all that stuff. I mean, it was in my head at one time. My problem is, can I be honest with you? I read a lot, but I retain very little. And what I have found is that while I'm reading the book, the reason I find it so gratifying is it feels like I'm actually thinking what I read while I'm reading it. That's the thrill. Like I'm reading, I'm like, wow, yeah, exactly.
You're like a robot.
I don't know how that.
You remember Robbie the robot?
Yeah.
On Lost in Space? Was that?
No, I wasn't born yet, but I know you were.
You were so born then. Don't give me that crapola. You were old enough to take. Now, what was that?
I was doing you.
You were old enough to take in Robbie the Robot.
I remember Robbie the Robot, Danger Will Robinson, that guy?
Yeah.
There was a guy, you said, there was a famous classic hack comic bit around Robbie the Robot. Remember the comic who would take the stool and put it on his shoulders and go, Danger Will Robinson, you remember?
No, that, man, that's a great bit.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Man, I never saw that.
Why don't you explain your damn joke now so I can understand?
It's not a joke. I was just saying, you know, you're like Robbie the Robot. You take in a lot of information. You try to, you feel it as it's going into you, yet you don't retain the importance.
You're losing him, Jim.
I don't know what the hell I'm saying. You know what?
Yeah.
I woke up too late, and I had a lot of bad dreams last night.
Okay, so why don't we talk a little bit about that? What kind of dreams did you have, Jim?
I dreamt that I can't even say dreamed right. I dreamed that I was tied up to the side of a mountain and my liver was torn out and devoured by Link from the Mod Squad.
Oh. You see the liver, now you just did, I'm going to die. Yeah, so that was one of the bad dreams. You got another one?
Yeah, it was exactly the same as the first.
Except it was still Link?
Link from the Mod Squad.
What's that guy's real name? Do you remember his name?
Link?
Yeah, that's it. Peggy Lipton, Link.
Right.
And what's his name? Scott Thurman. No, it wasn't. It was F. Rosa. He had several names.
Scott Thurman. Wasn't he in the O.J. trial?
Now, Phil Proctor's just, he's actually messing with us through Bill Kolar. Lynn Turman. I met him. He came to see the
play. Really?
That was Link? That was Link? Lynn Turman. Really? Okay, all right. He's yelling now,
We believe you. Calm down.
All right, so this is great. We've wasted a lot of time here. Let me get another story in, because this is going to be quite a day. 2 to 3 million people, according to Jorge Rodriguez, a union official and organizer, will be protesting on May 1st in the Los Angeles area. They plan, this is a pro-immigration protest or march. They're planning on 2 to 3 million people coming out, hitting the streets, and they want to close down the town. Chicago, New York, Tucson, Phoenix, Fresno as well. This is going to be a nationwide effort on behalf of immigrants' rights activists and anyone who knows them and anyone who's involved in this. Millions and millions are supposed to hit the streets, which I think is pretty mind-blowing. This is what they're asking for. They want full amnesty. They want full legalization for anybody who is here illegally, and they want them to become American citizens. Now, the Minutemen, of course, immediately said this is intimidation. It's intimidation when a million people march down main streets in our major cities under the Mexican flag. It's interesting how he...
Full amnesty.
That's what they want. They want full amnesty.
That's ridiculous. I mean, what about people who here are criminals, you know? You have, like, the next Charlie Manson.
There's got to be some middle-range agreement here. I mean, this is one of those situations where you have a progressive point of view, which is the way to address this problem is to address our trade agreements with Mexico. But in the short term, what are we going to do with 12 million people who want to pay taxes, who want to be American citizens, who want to work here and be part of this system and play by the rules right now? If it was up to some conservative legislators, they would all be immediately considered felons. 12 million felons, which some people speculate that's the reason they're building these FEMA detention camps. I don't know. But this is going to be a pretty hot issue because you got people like George Bush who said that we've got to make some sort of compromise in terms of allowing some of them to begin to work towards citizenship. You've got some people like yourself, your brother, Tom Hartman, who are saying it's not right. They're lowering the minimum wage by being here. They should not be allowed to work, and eventually they will go home. Isn't that right?
Well, what my brother is saying?
Yeah.
I think he's saying that, well, American corporations are in favor of illegal immigration so they can get the cheap labor and break unions and drive down the wages.
But what do we do now? I mean, I understand that the problem on that level is that level, but given the fact that if we don't make them lawbreakers, if the corporations aren't taken to task for allowing illegal immigrants to work there, how do you change the situation? It seems to me that if you follow that logic, what you're saying, it's still about, look, you cannot hire them It is illegal to hire them, so they will go home. And the ones that are already working within the laws that exist now and on their way to citizenships, so be it. They will be allowed to engage in that process. And the rest of the people that want to come back and engage in that process that is on the books now should be allowed to engage in that process. But as far as the many of them, the bulk of them, they should not be allowed to work and should go home. Is that what that is? That what you mean?
Not exactly.
It's tough. It's a difficult issue because in my heart, I say the more the merrier. I enjoy having new people around. I think it adds a little excitement to
the
country.
Yeah, well, if they're really, really fundamentalist conservative Christians, though.
Yeah. We got to go. Bill's like giving me a dirty look and waving his finger. Phil Proctor in just a few. This portion of the Mark Maron Show was brought to you by Amalgamated Bank. Tired of paying outrageous check fees and penalties? Come over to Amalgamated Bank.
I overdrew my account, and it only cost me $23.96. That's 4 cents less than Washington Mutual.
Amalgamated Bank. Our fees are slightly lower than everybody else's.
Amalgamated Bank.
And now he's the inspiration for Freedom Power, Mark Maron.
Oh, they're building that thing. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
The tallest building in the world, I think they're gunning for.
Yeah, good idea.
Hey, folks, I wanted to make a couple of announcements about me, if I could, about Mark Maron myself. Tonight I will be at the Improv on the High Time Show. I don't know what that means. But they sponsor the show. Right on, man.
Hi, James.
Free the weed. Also, this weekend, I will be at the Improv Friday and Saturday night. You can go to the website for information on that. That's the Hollywood Improv, 8:30 on Friday, 8 and 10:30 on Saturday. Also, Saturday during the day from 1 to 3, I will be at the SPCA Los Angeles branch in Long Beach, hanging out with the Strays. So if you want to come out and hang out with me and the Strays, come on down. For information, you can go to KTLK.com and check that out.
I'll be at Stiffy's in Stockton.
Well, good for you.
This Tuesday.
Okay. And what is Stiffy's?
It's kind of like an open mic.
Oh, okay. There you go. So right now, we haven't had one of these dispatches before, but Al Zakari showed up on camera the other day. And, you know, as you know, not too long ago, there were some dispatches found from Al-Qaeda that resembled news programs. This was found on an internet site. And we actually have the latest Al-Qaeda news pirated that we picked it up out of, I believe it was out of Afghanistan.
From across the nation, around the world, and under a burqa, this is Al-Qaeda News, with hosts Mohammed and Mahmoud.
Well, it's springtime, and we all know the first sign of spring.
Everyone dies!
I am Mohammed.
And I am Mahmoud.
This is Al-Qaeda News. Tonight's top... wait a minute, which camera am I on? Camera 1, camera 2, camera 1, camera 2.
Camera 2! Camera 2! Camera 2!
Tonight's top story. Iran is going to nuke Israel. U.S. is going to nuke Iran. People, why the hate?
Yes, yes. Nobody wins a nuclear war. Except us!
Remember, you cannot hug your children with nuclear arms. But you can clothe them in dynamite and send them into a crowded hospital.
Yes, that works fine. Just ask my nephew, Jalid. No, wait a minute, you can't. Oh boy, that was a closed casket funeral.
Oh yes. And now, a report from our travel reporter, Tina.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, guys. Hey, need to get away from it all? Why not kill two birds with one stone?
Or many infidels.
Don't interrupt, Tina.
Oh, don't criticize me.
You're an idiot.
No, you're the idiot.
No, you're an idiot.
No, I beg to differ. No, you're an idiot.
If you're planning a vacation, why not take along a trailer from Iraq? The Iraqis have a set of weather balloon trailers that are comfortable for travelers. Yet, for some reason, they attract U.S. air attacks. Why not ride one to a country you've always wanted to see and destroy? Visit beautiful Saudi Arabia or historic Israel. This is Tina for Al-Qaeda News saying, happy traveling.
Oh, no, you can... wait. Thank you, Tina, for that report.
I praise Allah for the day we kidnapped her. All those other reporters we captured were so depressing.
Yes. Well, that's all from us. This is Al-Qaeda News signing out saying, that's the way it is.
But not for much longer.
That's a little bit of the Al-Qaeda news. It's very disturbing that that they choose to speak in English, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know.
I'm just wondering what audience they're going after. It's just, it frightens me. You'd think they'd speak in their native language.
They hate our freedoms.
I'll say. Man. But I'm concerned about Tina. Hey, look. There's no reason to continue talking about that bit. It's behind us now, Jim. It's behind us, and there are bigger fish to fry, my friend.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, let's. Were you in New York on 9/11? Were you there?
Yes, I was.
Man, it was. Not only was it so horrendous a day and for the entire planet, but I can't understand how that United 93 movie is going to be at all successful. I mean, who the hell will go see that? Are you going to go see it?
No, I'm not going to see that. I originally thought that was going to be a TV movie because the way it was advertised, it looked like a TV movie.
But even if it were a TV movie, I just don't know.
I wouldn't want to see that. It's just gruesome.
We
and
talked
grim.
To Svetlana about it last night, and she didn't like it, obviously. But I heard that there was some. You know what? I'm going to have to go see it. I just changed my mind. I'm going to have to go see it in order to comment on it on this show. In earnest.
You know, I was listening to KPFK yesterday on the way back from this show.
Is that another radio station?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
KPFK.
Yeah.
It's a college. And they were talking about, they had this guy on who believes that it never happened, that those people, and you know, the conspiracy guys believe that
we
Flight 93 never happened.
Let's back up a little bit. We don't say conspiracy on this show. There's no such thing as a conspiracy theorist. They are independent, speculative investigators.
Okay, they were talking about these nut jobs.
They're independent, speculative investigators.
And they said it never happened, that it was shot down by a rocket, and that the way that their family members heard them over the cell phones when the people on the jet called home,
uh-huh.
It was done by an electronic voice simulator system.
Are you sure it wasn't maybe a sketch group out of Chicago?
No, I'm sure it wasn't. There weren't any jokes.
That's our sound? Is that us? Is that where we're going? Okay, well, good. Phil Proctor from the Fireside Theater will be here. I am curious about this building in New York, though. I don't know why they have to make it so tall. All right, we'll be back with Phil Proctor in a minute. Amalgamated Bank means people.
I've seen the manager like 56 times. I've talked to everybody at the main office in Kansas City, but I still have over $1,000 in return check fees, and it's for the same check. And it's not even mine. It's somebody else's check. They are debiting my account with someone else's check. How can they do that? Why are they doing this to me?
Amalgamated Bank. Our fees are slightly lower than everybody else's.
Amalgamated Bank.
Amalgamated Bank. We're here to help families.
They lost our mortgage payments. That can't be legal.
Help themselves.
They took all our money. We're ruined.
Amalgamated Bank.
And now back to radio personality, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. I'm very excited to, you know what, before we introduce our guest, why don't we have a taste of some of that Fire Sign Theater. You know, I remember these albums from when I was a kid. I think I might have been just a little too young to understand it, but I remember seeing them, you know, tons of Fire Sign albums in the bins when you actually had to go through bins full of records. And I remember hearing some of the bits on the radio. But here's one we pulled off the website, which you can link to on markmaron.com.
Los Angeles, he walks again by night. Out of the fog, into the smog. Relentlessly, ruthlessly.
I wonder where Ruth is.
Doggedly, toward his weekly meeting with the unknown. At 4th and Drucker, he turns left. At Drucker and 4th, he turns right. He crosses MacArthur Park and walks into a great sandstone building.
Oh, my nose!
Groping for the door, he steps inside. Climbs the 13 steps to his office. He walks in. He's ready for mystery. He's ready for excitement. He's ready for anything. He's...
Nick Danger, Third Eye.
I want to order a pizza to go and no anchovies.
No anchovies? You've got the wrong man. I spell my name, Danger.
What?
The makers of fantastic cigarettes, long in the leaf and short in the can, bring you another true story from the tattered casebook of Nick Danger, Third Eye. Let's join him now in the adventure we call
Cut Him Off at the Pass.
As a member of the seminal 60s comedy troupe, Firesign Theater, Phil Proctor and crew got many through a difficult trip.
Can you say seminal on the radio?
Seminal, yeah.
Right, okay.
You can even say seminal.
Yeah, good.
Things have changed, Phil.
Well, we know that you like to mispronounce things, so that's probably perfect.
Oh, man.
Hey, but excuse me.
Antiletum.
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 I don't think you can say antiletum on the radio.
I had no idea. Here, let me just, I got an email or a blog posting from one of your fans, Phil.
Uh-oh.
Phil Proctor exclamation point. Oh, my God. Hey, tell him he totally saved me from a bad acid trip.
Oh, geez.
I tried to go to sleep and started thinking I would never sleep again and was bumming hard. Then my boyfriend put a Firesign Theater record on, and I mean a real vinyl record, and it got me back into the groove of tripping and laughing and analyzing and eventually fell sort of asleep.
I remember this girl.
That's how high everyone was. You could actually feel your listeners when they were listening.
the tendrils. And we did start, Jim, on KPF. K Radio, which you mentioned earlier, Pacifica Station.
Where is that located?
It's over in the valley, just on Ventura Boulevard.
You're also, let me just tell people before, because we're going to get to it when we talk to you about Window of Opportunity. That's a new play you're in here in Los Angeles at the Met Theater. There's a link to that on markmaron.com. And so, Phil Proctor, let's talk now about the beginnings of Firesign Theater. I'm sure you've talked about it before. So what year was that?
I was born in Goshen, Indiana. You mean the beginnings of the group.
We can go as far back as you want.
Well, you're actually asking me, you know, historical questions. My wife, Melinda, knows that I have a very bad sense of direction, and it has to do with dates as well. But I think it was around 1965 or 66 that the four of us got together. I'd gone to school with Peter Bergman at Yale, and we met up again out here.
You're a Yalie?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bula, bula, bula. Hula hula, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a fula. And the other guys were also there. Dave Osman and Phil Austin were working at KPFK. We discovered we were all fire signs. Bergman got this great idea that we should be the Oz Fire Sign Theater because he was the Wizard of Oz on Radio Free Oz, which was the first counterculture talk show, phone-in talk show.
Wow.
And of course, Disney wouldn't let us use the name Oz because they were going to do Return to Oz, and so we became the Fire Sign Theater. And we were all fire signs, and it's been confusing ever since.
Now, so you guys are all Ivy Leaguers from Connecticut.
No, just Peter and me.
Okay, the other two guys weren't.
No, yet. No. David went to Columbia, and Phil went to, he was in Fresno. He was in Fresno.
I love the fact that there's so many people in comedy. I love the fact that people that are well-educated make the choice to do this horrible thing.
Well, you know, you want to fight back.
Exactly.
You're in these Ivy League prisons.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, finally they let you out, and you've learned all this secret information.
Yeah.
You know, I was in the secret society, Scroll and Key, for instance.
Really?
Yeah.
Not the Skull and Bones.
Not Skull and Bones.
You'd be working in the White House right now.
If you said Skull and Bones and I was in Skull and Bones, I would have to leave the studio.
And shoot me later.
Well, that's a secret. We don't talk about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, there is a certain feeling of like, you know, cultural revenge when you get out. You got all this stuff in your head and you want to do something with it. And all of us were kind of raised on radio.
Uh-huh.
We were kids of the radio era. So it was in one ear and into the other. And that's where the inspiration that brought us all together to improvise on the radio, which is what we used to do. We did these real send-ups. We'd have people call in. We realized people were believing all of the stuff that we were doing.
Radio's wild like that.
Yeah.
I mean, people, we did a thing. I'm afraid to even tip it now because some people took it so seriously.
Amalgamated Bank.
Amalgamated Bank. That's
yeah,
one of them.
It's a real bank, man.
But we had a guy call in as a whistleblower from Nike saying that he just wanted to let people know anonymously that Nike was marketing a certain type of shoe to rapists.
Oh.
And he did the sneaky sneaker. Well, yeah, kind of. But he would say how awful it was that Nike was doing it, but what a great shoe it was.
Oh,
and some wicked woman called up. She's like, I can't believe that you. Yeah.
Well, we did a thing. We did the Oz Film Festival, and we were showing movies on the radio. And one of the movies that Phil Austin showed was it was called The Dentist, and it was a porno, basically. Long before its time, when porno, you know, you couldn't buy adult films, a lady called up and said, how dare you show a dirty film on the radio?
Did you get that on tape?
Oh yeah, we got all that stuff. Yeah, please. This, I, you know, the stories about all that, I could just go on forever. But contemporaneously, or now, whatever that window of opportunity is about corruption. That's one of the reasons why
the play.
The play.
Yeah.
And written by Sam Joseph. It's an incredibly funny cast, and it also has a funny twist at the end. It's
clever,
like smooth. Yep. Very clever. You saw it.
I did see it, and it was. You guys were all great. It was good fun.
A lot of fun.
And it did. I didn't call it. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Right. Right. And it's about corporate corruption, which couldn't be more timely. You know, we're all getting delayed and laid all the time now.
Kenneth Lay's.
So it's really fun, and we got another 3 weeks to go. So please, you know, come down and see us. Bring your Firesign Theater albums, and I'll get the whole entire cast to sign them.
You can bring all
really
30
unique.
Of the Firesign records.
Right.
Now, is that 30 records total, or is it just, is that 30 Firesign records or 30 records from all of you? Because I know you guys did solo projects. And
it's approximately 30 records from just the foursome, the fearsome foursome. And then there were other combinations, Procter & Bergman and Dave Osman and Austin did some stuff, and they did independent albums. So I guess you said 90, but it's probably something like
that.
Maybe it's 60 or 70 if you count the 45.
Really?
Yeah. There's a book out about a history of the Firesign Theater called Backwards into the Future, and it's on Panda Press, Bear Manor.
Bear
Manor. And it's amazing to me because I look into this thing, and he's got pictures of all the albums that we did in the back and all the 45s and everything. I mean, it's astonishing. It goes on for pages and pages and pages and pages. And there's all these wonderful pictures of us as kids. You know, we started in the 60s. Now we're in our 60s. So it's like we haven't gone anywhere, you know.
But it's you were such an important part of counterculture comedy at the time that the counterculture was real.
Yeah.
And how do you respond to people that are like, did the Firesign's first five records are really those are the core records?
Yeah.
And after that.
Yeah, you know, that's okay. We continue to look. We've had three Grammy nominations, and the last one was about, I don't know, 4 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
So we've continued, obviously, to create stuff that is, you know, that touches people and makes them laugh and makes them think.
It struck me when I was re-listening to some of the stuff that you guys actually preceded and probably inspired, certainly Cheech and Chong.
Absolutely.
That they're like, I realize that without you, there really is no Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
You did
Cheech and Gong.
Yeah. Whether or not you were talking about drugs, there was certainly you were.
We were certainly doing them.
Yeah,
so, you know.
And exploiting the mindset of the drug culture.
Yeah, we were called in Life magazine, an editorial about us. We were called the jesters of the rock generation. As well as being the Beatles of comedy. But, of course, you say the Beatles of comedy to contemporary generation. They go, Beatles of the Cars?
I don't know.
It's astonishing. It's terrifying. But yes, we were kind of making fun of the movement from the inside in order to keep people light.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because people come up to us after hearing our records, or after certain people come up and just says, so when is the revolution going to happen? You know, as though we had encoded some secret thing about, and we went, well, whenever you want it to, you know, it's up to you, my friend, you know, go in peace, you know, just go. You know?
Yeah, did you have people come up to you like, I am Nick Danger?
Oh, yeah, kind of. But I am Rocky Rococo, so I didn't take any of that. Is it get away before I kill you, you know? Yeah, yes, indeed. People identified with those characters.
So do we got a minute. How much do we want to play any, what was your favorite bit? I mean, looking back, let's say the original bits.
Gosh, when you asked me that, I thought immediately of Beat the Reaper, because here we are in another horrible, endless war, and at the time that Beat the Reaper came out, of course, we were protesting the Vietnamese situation, the Vietnamese war situation, not the Vietnamese, please, no letters. I love the Vietnamese. And at that time, Beat the Reaper became a kind of a call word for getting drafted. See, did you beat the Reaper this month if your number didn't come up? And another thing, Beat the Reaper more recently, since it's about, if nobody knows what I'm talking about, since it's about basically being injected with a disease, having a short time to discover what the disease is, to get the antidote, or you die.
Right.
And this is on our Waiting for Electrician or Someone Like Him album, which is the first album that we did. Rush Limbaugh actually picked up on this when Hillary Clinton and Bill, Hillary and Bill, remember them? Hillary
and
Bill Show?
Sure.
They were promoting a national health care scheme.
I remember that,
in England. And at that time, there was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal that said that because one of these schemes had gone bankrupt in the Netherlands, they had a television show where people would come on and say, my kidney is failing, and a bunch of doctors as well as, I guess, the audience,
yeah,
actually voted on who would get the dialysis.
Wow.
So Limbo said, this is the first on theater. The geniuses, they figured this out. They beat the Reaper. I have it right here. And he performed it on the air.
Yeah.
I heard this as we were driving. David Osman and I were driving to the airport to do a tour, a national tour. And it almost went off the road. It was
That's unbelievable to hear. Because, you know, at his core, that before he was what he was, he was just an FM DJ.
One of us. Yeah, right.
I don't think we really have time to play it right now. No. Let's see if we got time on the other side. Phil Proctor, you want to hang out for a minute?
I'd love to.
You know, we've got to do the Wheel of Anger, and that's something we do weekly with Jim.
You gotta get that anger out.
That's right. So you seem like you got a lot on your mind there. What do you say we spin the old Wheel of Anger there? And the wheel lands on... Wait, where the hell did Jim just go? Where's Jim? Did he leave the building here?
I don't know. I didn't see him go out.
All right. Well, look. When we come back, we'll find out what's going on, and hopefully get into the Jim Earl Wheel of Anger there.
Today in school we had to name our heroes. I mean, role models, and tell the class this one kid. Now, of course, this wasn't me. He stuck his hand up, and this is what he said before the school expelled his ass. I wanna be George W. Bush when I'm a grown-up. I wanna be George W. Bush when I'm a man.
Amalgamated Bank means convenience.
Their ATM wasn't even attached to the bank. It just emptied into the back of some guy's truck. What the f*** is that all about?
Amalgamated Bank.
They kidnapped and raped my sister!
Amalgamated Bank.
All right, here we are, we're back. Phil Proctor's still here. There's no Jim. What we heard going out there was, I Want to Be George Bush. You can get that at iwannabebush.com, I-W-A-N-N-A. BEBUSH.com. I don't know where the hell Jim is. I honestly don't know what's going on here, Phil.
It's very unsettling.
Yeah.
Mark, I got a call on line 8.
Line 8? I didn't even know we had a line 8. Hello?
Hey, Mark. Yo, it's me, Jim.
Hi, Jim. I can't hear him. I can't hear him in my head here. What the hell's going on, Jim? You had a Wheel of Anger to do. Where are you?
Right, Mark, right now I'm driving while I'm talking on my cell phone.
Why are you doing that, Jim?
So I can tell you what my Wheel of Anger is about.
Fine. Fine. What's it about?
It's about people who drive while talking on their cell phones, Mark.
Uh-huh.
Did you know 80% of all accidents are caused by driver inattention? And for the most common distraction is talking on the cell phone? I mean, what could be more important than keeping all your wits and faculties focused on keeping your fat-ass, resource-sucking SUV from running down some hippies at the farmer's market?
Well, that's...
You know, Mark, I've seen you drive on the cell phone.
You've been watching me drive?
You don't need to get personal, Mark. Besides, how else am I going to follow you home and look through your living room window all night?
What?
Please, Mark, you don't have to raise your voice to me. Here's my point. Is badgering your agent really worth risking the lives of thousands of people on the 134 Glendale Freeway interchange right before the San Fernando cutoff?
Jim, where are you?
Where am I? Mark, right now I'm in my car driving.
Yeah, that's obvious, Jim. I just want to know where you are. Where are you? Get
the f*** out of my way, Grandma! Move it or milk it!
Jim, you sound upset and distractive. Okay, and distracted. I get your point, man. Shouldn't you maybe come back to the studio before you hurt somebody, Jim?
What are you talking about, Mark? I haven't even left the parking lot yet. Hey, is that your DeLorean?
No. I don't have a DeLorean, Jim.
Oh yeah, sure you do. Yeah, see, there's your vanity plate. MRNATN1. What does that mean?
Nothing.
Let's see, MRN stands for Marin. Marin, A-T...
All right, okay, it's Marination. Marination. Are you happy, Jim?
Marination? You mean there's a Marination 1 and there's a Marination 2?
That's all right, that's Mishnah's, all right? I gave it to her for Christmas, okay?
Man, and she lets you do it to her?
Oh, Jim. Are you sure all this doesn't have anything to do with me for getting your check the other day?
Of course not, Mark. I'm over that.
damn it, Jim. Are you... What? Are you scratching my DeLorean?
Let me put it this way, Mark. Your plate now says MR1. Hey, everybody, Mark's an MR. He's a number one MR. Yeah. Oh, man, that is hilarious. Okay. Get the f*** out of my way, Grandma. You're sitting on the edge of a great abyss.
All right.
You've just taken another ride on Jim's Wheel of Anger. I'm Jim Earl. Hey, and you've just been Earl. Damn it. Get out of my way.
All right, Jim, why don't you come back now?
That's more like the steering wheel of anger, isn't it?
You know, it's like I heard the skidding. I heard it, and I knew that something bad was going on, but I couldn't tell just quite how bad it was.
This guy is your partner?
Yeah, he is, and he's probably going to be back in a second.
Reminds me of the Firesign Theater Party.
Did you guys fight a lot?
Ha, 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 ha! Don't make me laugh!
Now there's a dial tone.
Uh-oh.
Wait, how,
that's not a good sign.
Hello, what's hey, how's it going? This is the improvisational magic that we don't ever want to erase. You know what I'm saying?
Hell, we made a living out of it. Are you kidding?
All right, well, hang out a minute. We'll finish up. I want to talk to you about the Library of Congress.
Fireside Theater, yeah.
Hold on a minute. We'll be back with Phil Proctor. Maybe Jim will come back.
Maybe I'll leave, too.
Okay.
No, don't.
Okay.
And now, what's this fly doing in my soup? Mark Maron.
Genius. Genius. Our guest in studio, the fly in the soup thing, that's genius, Jim. Hilarious.
You know, you write like four or five of these a day, and you got to have some stinkers.
Yeah, that must be tough.
Looks more like a zipper in the soup, actually.
Zipper.
A little more surreal. And, you know,
I like
see
that.
Fantastic.
That's why he's a member of the Firesign Theater, and you're sitting here with me. Huh?
Hey, you know, this is a theater of sorts.
It sure is.
Theater of the absurd.
It's the theater of the never-ending... it's been very good, Jim.
It is.
And Phil Proctor is still with us, and he's about to tell us about how a seminal comedy troupe from the 60s...
Still talking dirty, huh?
...gets to meet the president.
Yeah, well, not exactly. But we were bushwhacked. It didn't show up. But the Firesign Theaters' Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers, our 1971 seminal album, was inducted into the Library of Congress a historical recordings collection last Tuesday. And we did get to fly down on the president's dime, and they put us up at the Capitol Suites, and they fixed us a great lunch and took us on a tour of the incredible Library of Congress. And we were sitting there for the press conference. We got to perform some material from the album, sitting between Martha of the Vandellas and Bob Hendricks, who is Jimi Hendrix's cousin, who is in control of his stuff. 50 albums, 50 recordings were inducted. Among them, I have the list here, The Old Foghorn from Kewanee, Wisconsin, Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder, just to give you Allen's Alley segment from the Fred Allen Show, Blueberry Hill, Fats Domino, Whole Lot of Shaking Going On, Jerry Lee Lewis, That'll Be the Day, Buddy Holly, 1 o'clock, on and on and on. Oh, yeah, and the first official transatlantic telephone conversation. You remember that one. That was a big hit.
That's a recording.
1927, yeah. So all of this interesting stuff and the Firesign Theaters.
That's unbelievable.
It was great.
I wonder how they pick all that stuff. Who does that?
Well, actually, you can go on the website and vote for your favorite recording of all time, and they take that into consideration from the actual unwashed masses. And then there are people who are on a special panel but they have to choose, like, they have to choose one of our records.
Wow. And what does it mean? Does it mean that you can go to the Library of Congress and someone's going to be like, hey, do you have the Firesign Theater album?
We can take out the album, you know.
Yeah.
As long as we return it, because the penalties are very severe in Washington these days. They cut your hands off.
Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez will send somebody to your house.
It's a friendly fascist, you know, the friendly fascistic way of doing things. You know?
And then you can do an interesting, you could do the Firesign Live from Gitmo.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
So you and the guys still talk and hang out. It's been now you're coming up on your 40-year anniversary.
This is our 40th anniversary, November 17th, and We hope to celebrate it with the release of some collected stuff. You know, we did XM Radio, a lot like you guys are doing, on the wing, you know, with certain pre-recorded stuff. We did that in their first year of extraterrestrial recording, a show called Fools in Space. We may be releasing some stuff from that.
Cool.
And, you know, we also have, we're working on a Nick Danger box, because we did many, many Nick Danger adventures over our 40 years, and we're thinking of putting together a boxed edition, Danger in a Box.
That's good. Yeah, well, good for you for hanging on to all that stuff. I have boxes of tapes that will never see the light
of
day.
It's terrifying, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Save it. Maybe someday you can, you know, the president will buy it from you, and, you know.
That's what I'm banking on, as opposed to my mother just going, let's throw it away.
Yeah, throw it away.
Yeah. Oh. Phil Proctor, thanks for joining us. It was great talking to you.
Come see the Window of Opportunity, folks. Bye.
Now, we're going to switch gears just a little bit. Can we set the tone a little with some of Gershon Kingsley's music? Can we hit that, Bill? Oh, there you go. Gershon Kingsley has a very interesting story. He left Germany when he was a kid in 1922. Went out, went to Israel when it was Palestine. Worked on a kibbutz. Came to America in 1946 and worked for Bugsy Siegel as his piano player in the Flamingo Hotel. He was an organist at a Beverly Hills synagogue. He was a Broadway conductor in New York City. Then he bought one of the first synthesizer keyboards that was built by Robert Moog and went on to record Popcorn. And I am very proud to be, you know, a stop on your journey, Mr. Gershon Kingsley. Welcome to the Mark Maron Show. Thank you for being here.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you something. This, I got to tell you, you've had quite a life. Now, the album that they reissued, that just came out, God is a Moog, is
one. By the way, it's Moog is spelled as M Moog, not Moog. Moog. Everybody makes a mistake. It's Moog.
Moog.
That's right.
Oh, now I know.
Yes.
This is one of the strangest albums I have ever heard.
So
when you made it, though, what I want to know is that there is some. I'm a Jewish person myself, and there is a series of pieces on here. About Judaism. The Jewish Experience is a series of five instrumental pieces. Now, do you feel that the Moog is a religious instrument?
Well, you see, when you ask me if it's a religious instrument, every instrument becomes religious when you write religious music with it.
Okay. So is that music meant to be played in temple?
You know, it's an interesting question because and around this time I was commissioned by a conservative synagogue here on a very famous synagogue here to write a Friday night service, and for the first time I used the Moog. And when afterwards people listen to the song and say, what crazy sound is that, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's something, look, it always comes down, but you hear something for the first time, you're not familiar with this before, it's always sounds strange.
Uh-huh.
And Beethoven had his third symphony performed. There was a very interesting thing on television recently where they showed that when Beethoven had his third symphony, it was called the Eroica. People never heard anything before, so all the people who were there, the king and the queen, said, that's crazy music.
Yeah.
But once you hear it, you get used to it. That's why, for instance, the synthesizer is not something you take for granted.
Now,
you know, for instance, when I did these crazy songs, these Yiddish songs with the Moog accompaniment, they thought I was crazy. I thought I was crazy, and everybody thought I was crazy. And today, they accept it as something very natural.
Yes, well, I tell you, I listened to some of the Moog pieces that you created, and it seems to me that a lot of people maybe used you as an inspiration because there was a whole movement of electronic music in the 80s, and now there's another movement of electronic music in the in 2006. I imagine that did you get emails from kids saying you're a genius?
Yes and no. I know that a friend of mine who started my website said I have about 1,500 hits a day, but these are unknown factors. I don't know who they are. You know, it's just a figure. Could be. I've no idea. Some people tell me. No, I tell you something much more unusual happened to me. You know that I had a big article in the New Yorker about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's how we found out about you.
Okay. I get a letter and a book from a person who wrote to me, Dear Gershon, I remember when I was 14 years old, you accompanied me when I was playing the violin, and then I was 15, you gave me a beautiful present of two Brahms sonatas. I always wanted to know what happened to you. So I looked up in the New Yorker and I found it. Arnold Steinhardt, you know that name?
No, he's a famous violinist.
No, he is the most famous string quartet in the world called the Guarneri Quartet.
Oh, the most famous string quartet. Well, that's very flattering. I'm glad he found you.
That's amazing. So music, you always say it's always some vibrations what happens. People know you, don't know you. You know, it's something... I don't want to go into philosophy or psychology, but it's something archetypal about how music and religion is. You know, I'm actually in good company. Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, the great composers, they were all agnostics.
Yeah, I guess that is primarily the reason why their music is so transcendent, is that you kind of look to speak for God through your music.
That's actually because we have God in us. Uh-huh. I want to say it this way, because we don't need an outside God.
How much did God have to do with popcorn?
Oh, the little God asked me, would you write this tune? You could make a lot of money with it.
did you have any idea that would become... I mean, I remember that from when I was a kid. What year was that?
It was 1972.
So I was 9 years old, and
it
was everywhere.
Yes.
That song was everywhere. What are some other songs we would recognize from television that you did?
For instance, I have something very unique. You watch sometimes PBS.
Uh-huh.
You watch when the glow comes up from WGBH in Boston.
Yeah.
That's my music behind.
Oh, yeah?
The little fanfare.
That's hilarious.
I also did the music for the Disney parade, you know, the electric parade.
At Disneyland?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
All over the world, yes. Since the mid-60s.
No kidding. That's terrific. So I guess because of the fact that you got one of the first Moogs and really learned how to operate it, that you were a hot commodity with the strange sound.
Yes, in the beginning, yes, and of course I was the first one who was crazy enough to get four musicians together to play a concert in Carnegie Hall.
Oh, that's amazing. My friend Jim here wants to ask you a question.
Yeah, did you write the Percolator song?
No. No.
See, that,
you mean to talk about... No.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I wrote something like it. I did the first for the Max... Not Maxwell House, the other coffee.
Oh.
The first... freeze-dried coffee for...
Folgers?
Another thing, which also very close to it. You know?
Sanka? But,
look, I did so many commercials. Everybody wrote commercials. And the sound, of course, was so crazy. I have a whole album of people want to release it, my old commercial with these crazy songs.
You have to release it. You know, there was some fringe kind of strange groups. There was a group called The Residents that released an album called The Commercial Album that was fake commercial music. And I'm telling you, they're stealing your stuff, Gershon.
They don't call it stealing money today. They have a nice name called sampling.
Mm-hmm. Sampling.
You know what happened to me? I had a record out years ago, Music to Moke By is called.
Uh-huh.
And there was one number on it called Hey Hey.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly somebody called me up and said, Kingsley, I heard your music on a hip-hop group, RJD2.
Oh, wow. So they sampled your music.
They called it the horror, you know, like a woo-woo. And you know... So, of course, I didn't put my name on it. So my lawyer said, listen, you better do something about it. So, of course, they sent it out of town, and now this tune is now become now a new, sort of a new background version for Levi's in Europe.
No kidding. Did you get your money for that?
Not yet.
But you won the case.
I hope so. Yeah, sure.
That's unbelievable. Well, Gershon, it's great talking to you, and I wish we could talk more because you've got quite a life behind you. But I put a link to the record on my site, so maybe we'll have introduced some new people to your music.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you have a good night, sir.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. You're listening now as we go out on break to Gershon Kingsley. God is a Moog. Moog. That guy was great. Moog. I want to have him. I want to go to New York to do a whole show with him. You know? All right, we'll be back with the short order news.
Stay where you are, because I'm looking at you through the bathroom window. Oh, and Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next.
And now he's still totally unprepared for the next disaster. Mark Maron.
Listen to that. That's Gershon Kingsley jamming. That's God telling him how to make money. He said that. Oh, how much do you remember this? Do you remember this when you were a kid? It was like everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote the parade music for the Disney parade. That guy was great. I wish he was out here. He's in New York. When I go to New York, I'm going to have to sit down with him with a microphone. Listen to the drums coming in. How fun is that? They used to play that for the Dialing for Dollars movie in Albuquerque when I was homesick from school. All right. I want to hear some of the Jewish music. You gotta, let's pull that thing out or turn that one down.
That was some of the Jewish music.
Well, everything he does, obviously, is Jewish. Well, listen to this. Listen to this. This will kill you. What I would do to watch a congregation respond to this. But he was right what he was saying, that if you hear something enough, you get used to it, and it's just what it is. Let's hear the next one. I have no idea what you're saying. Yeah! Time for some temple. Let's kick it! Okay, enough fun. That guy was great, and we'd even talk about his strange and unusual, beautiful life.
His early life, yeah.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine the dough of making that? I mean, I'm not talking about money, but I am talking about money, but I'm talking about the music business. That's the game, man. That is the game. There's a million ways to make money in the music business. Million ways. If you own the publishing, and I still think there is. I still think there is a lot of money to be made in the music business. Am I right, fellas? Andy on the board over there, he's like, you know, the Disney parade music. I have to go back to Disneyland now, and with the knowledge that I have about Gershon Kingsley making that music. I love that guy. I love that guy now, and I want to go to his house. You got to go to his website.
I think he would really appreciate that.
He'd have a great time. How lucid is he? And he's in his 80s, that fella. I hope to hell I'm that lucid in my 80s. I bet you, I wonder if he ever talks about sickness on the dinner table. I'm never going to
get used
to
that. Sure he does. Everybody does.
I'm never going to get used to that, though. I know, but not, you know, why you're, I don't know, man. Like, you know, I'm a guy mouthful of yellowtail, and my buddy's telling me that they had to go in twice to get more of his prostate. What is that? I don't have any problem with him saying that. I love the guy. He's a great guy. I just don't know how to quite have those conversations over food. Tomorrow, from the UCB, we've got Matt Besser. Maybe he's going to be Matt Besser. I don't know. You know what? I take that back. I don't know what he's going to be when he gets here. But, you know, it'll be some manifestation of that. The author of the new book on John Cassavetes is going to be here, Marshall Fine, from the coup. Is that what he's the hip-hop artist? Boots Riley will be here in the studio for a while. I wonder how many people he travels with. Sometimes those hip-hop fellas bring a lot of people. Also, radio legend Bill Jackson will be in studio to teach me a few things. Bill Jackson was one of the radio greats. He was known for his interviewing. He's been out of the game for a while. He retired, but someone hit me to him, and he's going to come in and check my stuff. You know, a lot happened in the world today, and we here at the Mark Maron Show don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here's today's Mark Maron Short Order News. Mark Maron Show, Short Order News. Yeah. After conducting an inquiry, a Senate panel is recommending that the government abolish FEMA. FEMA officials had no response to the inquiry since they were too busy dealing with the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. The Senate has voted to divert some of the money President Bush requested for the Iraq War to increase security on the nation's borders and give the Coast Guard new boats and helicopters. Republicans in Congress argued that voting to spend the money defending American borders will save a great many jobs of Republicans in Congress. A Ku Klux Klan group plans to hold a rally June 10th on the grounds of the Antietam National Battlefield.
Yeah, but it's Ku Klux Klan.
Ku Klux... Now you're just making fun of me.
No, no, not at all, man.
Ku Klux Klan, a Ku Klux Klan group, plans to hold a rally June 10th on the grounds of the Antietam National Battlefield, site of the bloodiest one-day clash of the Civil War. Locals say it will be the biggest turnout of Imperial Wizards and Grand Dragons on a battlefield since the Lord of the Rings. On a battlefield since the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Okay, that's the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. Can we, is popcorn, when it's out, we're not plugged in anymore, are we? Can we, yeah, can we turn popcorn back on as we, as I say goodbye to the people? I'm gonna have that in my head for a few days. That'd be a good gym song, I think. I need to go, dude. Man, I'm just getting doughy. So, this is great. There's no... Oh, it just makes me so happy. Doesn't it?
It's very classical. It's got, you know, it's got the classical bass.
But it's making me smile. This is terrific. I don't care if the world ends. Who the hell cares? This is God speaking through Gershon Kingsley, telling him he's going to make a fortune with this. Where the hell is mine? Where is God telling me how I'm going to make my popcorn? Folks, I hope you're okay. I really do. And I hope your prostate's fine and your liver and all your other organs are working well. God, he's jamming. Good night, sheeple. Oh.